If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Mike Ray, former cop and body double for a world-famous action star, was ready to put show business behind him when he was asked to do one last favor for Hollywood's hottest new actress. All he had to do was find her the necklace from a forgotten film and not get killed in the process. From the insane house parties of Malibu and the reclusive mansions of Beverly Hills to the scorching California desert, Mike finds himself in a scandal involving one of the world's most eccentric billionaires, the Nevada Mafia, and a sadistic Estonian porn kingpin. To find the necklace, he'll have to blow the lid off a secret buried in the California desert that stretches back to ancient Egypt, with an irresistible client who won't take no for an answer. If the job doesn't get him killed, she just might. Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main has been described as a fast-paced love child of The Big Lebowski and Indiana Jones. Find out why this 99-cent novella for a limited time has stormed the best-reviewed Amazon Mysteries charts. It's Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main, available for only 99 cents.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Boys and girls, ghouls and goblins, maybe not the goblins, we've actually heard what they do. Everybody else, this is the Weird Things Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Woo! I'm a ghoul! Not a goblin!
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Huzzah, America! This is a great week for weird news. I don't even know where to begin to
start.
We're
in a golden age. A golden age for weird news.
The weirdest of weeks. It was the weirdest of weeks. It was the most normal of weeks.
But mostly the weirdest.
So, we're going to get started right off with a Spiro and the Fudge.
Yeah!
Whoa!
On the case.
All right, now here's the thing. Before we get this scenario going here, for those of you who don't know, Spiro and the Fudge are the, they're the investigators. They're the super cops of weird things. They're the ones I send in when I have the case so hard to crack, so hard to figure out what's going on.
Listen up, Chief.
These imbeciles.
Listen up, Chief. Me and the Fudge, we get paid by the hour. Can you step this up a bit? Come on, let's get going.
Yeah. All right, before I call you in.
Listen, the Fudge is kind of a by-the-book cop, right? And Spiro is a bit of a loose cannon and might have a little bit of a fondness for his partner that goes beyond a fraternal order of police.
So, here's the deal. Right now, I want you to know, I want us to know, I want the audience to know, you guys are working on a cover somewhere. This is, you're working like a separate case that ties in together. Hmm. We'll start off with Spiro.
Yeah, what's up?
Where are you working right now? Where are you undercover? What are you doing right now?
Just answer me one question, boss. Take a look at me. Am I wearing blackface?
No.
That's right, because that would be racist. Instead,
it looks more like a tan shoe polish.
You might be
trying to pull an Ashton Kutcher.
I'm infiltrating the Tanning Society of America, trying to figure out why they love damaging their cancer cells and getting all brown town.
So, like, when you show up to tan, are you doing like full naked tan?
You know what? I am, but I put those little like Playboy bunny stickers right on my, above my crotch so that I get the little white tattoo there.
So like, all right. So, I'll be the tanning salon operator. I want you to walk in and, you know, you're going to try to just start off.
Sure. Hello, Governor. How would somebody from Cuba go about getting a massage tan?
I assume you want the naked tan?
Sure. Righto.
Okay, you know we have a room where you can take off your clothes. You don't actually walk in here naked.
It's efficiency, mate. Read just-in-time management. It's efficient all around. A Cuban like me ain't got time to be taking off his clothes in rooms alone.
Meanwhile, the fudge is working.
By the way,
what case?
The book for this case is called A Cuban Like Me, the Spiro and the Fudge Mystery.
So meanwhile, Fudge, where are you working?
I'm running down some check fraud, as it turns out, there's a money laundering ring being executed by a group of profiteering young brownie scouts.
That's racist.
All right. So, are you in disguise as one of these?
No. What I decided to do is because you know they sell the cookies, so I decided to take the police standard van. But I stripped all the decals off, so it's just a big gray van. I shaved in a mustache, and I'm only wearing a sweatshirt and sweatpants. And I'm just rolling up to them and asking them if I can please buy their cookies over and over and over again, like even after I buy them a couple times. And I want to see if they'll keep selling them to me, even if I pass them phony checks.
All right. Sounds moronic. Perfect. Both of your phones ring at the same time.
Ring. Body Rock is in the house. Dude, holy hello.
Gentlemen, I've got a case for you.
What is it?
Well, the details are kind of sketchy. We've got what may be a homicide.
All right. Wow. That's my specialty. That and suicides.
It's a homicide. It's in a forest. I need you guys to go there.
My middle name is Forest Homicide Spiro Fudgenston.
Wait, hold on. I got to work with Spiro? There's no way that I am getting back on a case with that home.
Fudge.
Wait, Fudge. Hold on.
Fudge, I'm on the line, bro.
Way that I'm working with that homeboy again.
Listen, I had my last name changed to Fudgenston since last time, and I'm ready to rock. Plus, I got a sweet tan.
Did you convert?
I converted to smooth dark brown skin. I'm an olive Cuban, mate.
All right, jump cut. We're in the forest. There's a dead body there. It's a bit decomposed.
My eyesight's a little bit bad since I left my eyes open the entire time I was in the UV tanner. It's hard for me to really see what I'm looking at. Is this a male or a female there?
It's a male, and you're still wearing your Speedo from your tanning, by the way.
You're lucky I'm wearing that much. I pulled it down a little bit so you can see just the Playboy Bunny ears poking out. Like, maybe there's something going on downtown, if you know what I'm talking about.
But the thing but is, it's like it's one upside of those down, Speedos. So it looks like the Yellow Pages fingers doing the walking.
It's one of those Speedos, though, where, like, the side edges are, like, clingy and, like, come up halfway up his abdomen. Yeah. So, like, it's almost more offensive than if he just had his junk out.
Well, and it's really a shame because part of my undercover character is I eat a lot of donuts. So I'm not really in my best shape right now. But, look, I got the tan. I'm going to rock it while you flaunt it. That's what I'm saying.
We're in Cuba.
That's right.
We've got a dead body there, okay? And I can tell you a couple things. I know a little bit about the identity of the person. I can't get into how they died just yet.
Is this person royalty?
No.
Not even remotely, like in a King Ralph kind of way?
Probably not.
Should we start off in some royalty just to make sure? And then if he becomes the king, we'll know.
Let's go to your plan B.
Hmm. Yeah, all right. Usually these things, someone gets dumped out in the woods there. You're looking at it's someone, a denizen of the streets, a street walker, a drug addict, a librarian, somebody who's on the wrong side of the track.
A lady of the books, we call them.
We found his car nearby.
Yeah? What is he in front of?
What was it? Fancy car?
Was it an adult bookstore he's in front of?
Not a fancy car.
Was it a funny car? Like with a giant spoiler?
I'll give you a little more background on this guy. He's been in and out of trouble.
He's a drifter.
Yeah, and he's actually got a record.
Is it Mel Gibson?
Right. Well, no, idiot. Mel Gibson would be royalty. So, all right, what are the crimes? I mean, like, is it petty larceny?
Yeah.
Accidentally hug an endangered rhinoceros? You know, they're digging people for all sorts of nonsense these days.
It was murder. Things.
Ooh. Okay. The person he murdered, was there, did before he died, did he say, I'll get you from the grave?
Well, he murdered a guy who he thought sexually assaulted a member of his family.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait, before we get into this sexual assault thing, why would he say, I'm going to get you from the grave when he's already gotten him? When he
No, I'm talking about
The murderee, Justin.
Yeah.
The murderee. Oh, I thought he was like murdering him, and he's like, no. I'll get you from the grave. It's like, you're getting me now.
This is the equivalent of like a bully beating the crap out of a freshman and saying, it's going to get even worse at eighth period, bro. And then it's like, so it's like as you're stabbing him and killing him, you're just like, I'm also get you from beyond the grave.
All right. So he went after somebody and murdered somebody that he thought had sexually assaulted someone in his family. Was it like he messed with the wrong guy and like now the family of the guy who's murdered went after him maybe?
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like maybe if this guy's got a checkered past, and by checkered, I mean he killed Chubby Checker. It seems like revenge would be a likely reason for why he's now dead in the middle of a forest. What kind of forest are we in?
It's a thick forest with trees.
All right, hold on. Wait a minute. We're in a thick forest with trees. He killed somebody that he thought sexually assaulted his family, and now we can maybe build a little web here if it was a family situation. Was the person that he murdered either an elf or a dwarf who dwells in forests, which is why he's found here on home turf?
See, Fudge, this is the crazy talk you come up with when you're thinking stuff up while I'm not rubbing your shoulders. Let me fix this for you. You got to loosen up. You got to make this simpler.
Okay. Give me, please. All right. Hands to your side.
All right. Fine.
All right. And would it kill you to put pants on?
Look, some of us are professional enough that we live the character. Listen up. Here's
what character is this? You're not even in your accent anymore.
Listen, Governor.
I'm gonna throw out some little police technique here.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
This sounds suspiciously like you're trying to tell us our jobs, by the way, which I, as a Cuban, don't appreciate.
Hey, as your police
legendary Latin temper.
Maybe we do a stakeout here, okay?
Yeah.
Here's the question. Here's what's suspicious. You got a body on the ground, a dead body. It's the best kind of body if you're going to be just a body. You've got his vehicle. It's not in his vehicle, and he's dead.
What kind of vehicle is it? It's not. All right, I got a theory I'm working right now, this angle. The vehicle, by any chance, is it a Batmobile?
No.
Ah, well, there goes that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there is the possibility that they know that this guy did not voluntarily leave his car and end up where he did.
Did he?
So he was like, he was brought out there in his own vehicle. Is it his vehicle?
It's his vehicle.
All right. So somebody put him in the car and said, hey, mister, we're going to blank forest. You better drive or I'm going to kill you. And he went out there, and irony of ironies, he got killed anyway.
Well, all right. So tell me this: the car, is there anything unique about it? It's just a plain Jane. Maybe it's not a van with the decals ripped off.
It's like a truck. It's like a regular, just sort of beat up old truck kind of thing.
Huh?
Ford plain Jane.
All right. What about? Are there any tracks? Sign of a struggle? Did he walk out of his own accord?
Kind of hard to see the tracks right now. A little bit of snow on the ground.
Not an accord, Brian.
It's a Civic. Help me out physically. What color hair? Can we? I assume. Like, how did he die?
Well, all right. We know who this guy is, right? Like, what was his job?
No, we don't. We don't. We don't know who this guy is.
All right. Let's.
How do we know he has a record?
Oh wait, no. I guess we should know who he is if he has a record.
Like his record, like in his pocket. Like, hey, I murdered a dude who I thought sexually assaulted.
He keeps his memoirs.
We have a dead guy. Okay.
Yeah.
His body shows some signs of trauma.
Yep.
He's a convicted murderer, second-degree murder. We find him dragged from his vehicle in the middle of a forest. Okay? Now, the first instinct we have here was he maybe murdered by somebody who was upset that he murdered somebody else, or revenge killing?
Yeah, that's what we were thinking.
Can I throw in a possibility of vigilante?
Like
a random vigilante?
A random vigilante? Well, wait, so you're saying it's not the family exacting revenge? It's a disinterested...
We know it's not a family member who did this.
Huh. Not related to the victim of the murder that he did before either, huh?
Nope, definitely not.
And the guy's definitely not wearing, like, bat ears or a cape or nothing.
Well, no, what he's saying is maybe he got, I mean, because obviously Batman doesn't kill people, he puts him in Arkham
Asylum. No, I'm talking about the victim.
Well, but Batman's dead. Are you suggesting Batman's dead?
Look, you run your angles, I run mine. So far, my theory's not looking so hot, but I'm still holding out.
Because I think this was like there was somebody. Listen, he's a murderer. He did time for the victim did time for his murder.
Yeah, he did second degree. He did time. And I'm gonna tell you now, it's in Canada, so I think he did probably like 6 weeks in a.
It's like the conversion rate.
Yeah,
it's like 2 years American.
He did a 6 week stint in the minor league system of the Windsor Spitfires.
Yeah, that was his punishment. Is he had to play hockey for a year.
Hey, you got to play left wing now, eh?
All right.
So I think and maybe we're suspecting possibly this was a vigilante thing. So maybe this guy gets out of jail and all of a sudden we're looking at him. It's not a Batman thing. Maybe it's like the Punisher, like Canadian.
Maybe
Punisher.
The Punisher.
Hold
okay.
on. Look, can we get back to how he died? I mean, we got a body here. Surely, like, is there gunshot wounds?
Violent trauma. You ready to?
No, wait. No gunshots or violent trauma.
There's violent trauma. There's no gunshots. Are you ready? I'm gonna step this up. Okay.
Go ahead.
Now we're doing an autopsy. The violent trauma and the cause of death are different. He died, and then the violent trauma happened to him.
Wait a minute. Did he die of natural causes? Like maybe somebody. Maybe somebody found a dead body and like, whoa, free body. What would you do with the
body?
Some
people would like to think that he maybe died of natural causes. I prefer to think that the brown bear that dragged the body of the second degree murderer from the car in the middle of the forest and devoured him was a vigilante.
See, you're saying that the bear was Batman. So what you're
I'm saying Spiro was on
the right track.
The bear could have been the Grizzly from Marvel Comics. Like, he probably could have been like a member of Alpha Flight we're not aware of.
Wait, could it be Grizzly Adams? Maybe it was actually Grizzly Adams.
No, Brian,
this is a bear, Brian.
Well, he's got that bear badge.
I mean, Spiro. Hey, listen, we're dealing with a bear vigilante here. We need to figure out. You were right on the Batman thing. We need to figure out a signal so we can alert him and let him know when there's like cases that we can't handle. Maybe there needs to be some.
See, the problem is like we think his signal is "Rawr!" but he thinks his signal is "Please, please leave me alone, leave me alone."
So here's the article: Canadian conservation officers have euthanized a black bear that ate the remains of a convicted murderer. So the bear matched the description of the one seen guarding a cache that contained the remnants of Rory Wagner. Rory Wagner had pleaded guilty in 1994 to murder. They say the bear pulled Wagner's body from his car after he died on a remote logging road. So here we have a bear. They didn't kill anybody. We think it's the bear, and they said they identified the bear. What did they get? Is that a bear? That's a bear. Kill it. This bear.
Wait, how did the guy die again?
Yeah, he was, I don't know, he said he just died in his car.
Whoa, all right. Look, here's the thing.
So wait, hold on, wait.
Wait. Here, where
was this?
Kamloops, British Columbia.
All right, here's the rule, bro. I watched Nature with Sir Richard Attenborough, and he said, "Hello, Governor, once you die, you become meat, like a tangerine." And,
I'm a tangerine.
And then that's the rule, man. It's like, I ain't gonna fall no vigilante bear for...
No, me either, man. And I'm saying, I mean, like, you know, waste not, want not. You know, your dog will eat you after a few days.
All right, so here's the question.
I think it's pretty clear that this bear is not the bear that Camloo needs. It's the bear Camloo deserves.
All right, here's the question. Let's say you happen to be, well, not a convicted murderer, but just a guy, and you die in your car, all right? You yeah. are dead, and let's assume, regardless of your religious affiliation, that wherever you are, you're in a place where you really could care less about your body, for you personally. You mind if a bear just gets a little side action on your thigh bone?
Dude, the worms are going to get me anyways. Should we go around digging up worms and killing worms because they're eating?
We're on the same page, right? We're like, if I die, feed me to a bear, right?
Oh, yeah. They have a problem in cemeteries. One, the reason you bury, you know, you don't really normally bury people like 6 feet under. You bury them a couple feet, but you bury them just deep enough that animals won't smell you and dig you out.
Yeah.
But that happens a lot.
This is actually true. And, like, you can ask my mom or my brother. I've told many of my friends that my wishes for my remains once I pass is to get as many of my friends and family that are alive into a minor league baseball stadium, put me at center field, and then release wild animals as they devour my corpse.
Oh,
that's actually
horrific.
Like something that I've told my friends and family.
Okay, I have no doubt that you actually say that, but in your heart of hearts, do you really want your mom to sit there and watch your dismembered corpse be ripped apart by feral dogs? As they tear open your softest bit, they bury their face.
At the same time, it's really funny.
No, it's the opposite of funny. Now, I'll tell you what is funny is CJ Johnson's explicit stated wishes that the wake begin and then his coffin be wheeled in and one paid person stand up and say, "See, I told you," in reference to late to his own funeral.
Oh, gotcha.
Wait, that's funnier than me getting ripped apart by wild dogs?
Yes, I believe.
Well,
Justin,
yours, the horrific part comes first.
Right. No. Well, here's the thing. Like, one is a joke that's hundreds of years old. The other is the horrific dismemberment as jackals bury their face in your butt sphincter and chew out the flesh. One...
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm not. We have a new connection because what you just said was hilarious.
You're like, you're just making my case for me, Brian.
I know. Why don't you sell this anymore?
All right.
This is great.
What if, like, I imagine it's like, it'll be like the Roman games where, like, they come up with this really, really great idea for a game. Like, all right, we're going to have crocodiles and we're going to have tigers. Okay. And then we're going to have, you know, some Irish. Because they're not people either, okay?
Yeah.
And they throw them into the middle of the ring, and they just sit there staring at each other. All right? So we put Justin's body. They release the hyenas, even better. And they're like, they're going to jump into the stands and start eating all the live meat. You ever hear the story about Rand Woodbury with his cougar on the cruise ship?
No.
We'll say mountain lion, so we don't go to the obvious joke. So Rand used to have, our buddy Rand Woodbury, magician, used to have a mountain lion on a cruise ship, because what's better than being in a self-contained, closed environment with no escape is a ferocious, man-eating predator.
Sure.
Sharing that with you, okay? You want, like, I'm going to write a horror novel about that one day, okay? So Rand has got this, and this, by the way, this mountain lion used to belong to a drug dealer.
Of course it did. Why wouldn't it? Oh, yeah. I went, by the way, I went into someone's apartment in Nashville, Tennessee, and they just had a full-on lynx. Lynx is big-ass cat. And it just sort of just hung out right next to me. That was highly discomforting. But go ahead.
At your neck going, I'm going to bite his neck. I'm going to bite his neck.
Hey, y'all, I'm going to bite your neck real quick.
He's like, what's going on, guys? It's just a lynx hanging out in Nashville.
So Rand has got this mountain lion on stage. He hops down, and all of a sudden, like, the leash or whatever comes undone, and the cat goes running towards the audience, jumps to the audience, runs up the aisle, and it jumps up onto the box where the people are, like, in the dance fancy seats are there, and it's like, meow, and then runs past, and Rand goes taking off after it. Audience thought it was fantastic.
Oh, they thought it was a bit? Meanwhile?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, great.
You're like, that's hilarious. It's just like a man eating cougars wild on their ship.
Dude, I used to have to feed that mountain lion.
That's amazing.
It was horrifying. Rand came to me one day, and he goes, listen, I gotta be out of town, and I need you to feed the cat. Because I can't ask my wife to do it. Oh, like, they're divorced now. I bet he wish he did.
See, this is why you wish you had Justin's corpse around. You just throw it on stage.
So wanna go take a trip around the world, guys?
Yeah,
but sure.
First,
before we do that, do we want to read a real quick sponsored spot?
No, we don't.
Yeah, I do, because I love sponsored spots.
Fine.
Well,
fine.
All right, here, let me just get halfway through it and tell me if you like it. How about this?
All right.
Con Langery is a podcast all about constructed language, from the more famous ones like Klingon and Na'vi to a lot you haven't heard of, as well as some interesting discussions on linguistic topics. Listen, if you want to be the coolest kid at Dragon Con, you're going to need to know some languages. And I'll tell you what, I've listened to the Con Langery podcast. They have all the cool contemporary science fiction and fantasy television series and movies. They all got their own invented languages. And if you're into that, there's no better place to go. So go ahead and look it up, Con Langery, the podcast on iTunes or Google. And thank you to George Corley for being our first sponsored spot for this week. If you would like to be a sponsored listener for the Weird Things podcast, all you need is $30. Go to weirdthings.com/sponsor.
Hey, Justin, real quick. Number one, can you spell that URL for us?
It's not a URL. It is Conlangery.
All right.
Is the podcast. Con Langery. Everything from Klingon, Na'vi, Dothraki. You know, there's no pod, there's no language that's invented. They're not talking about
this. Is what I wanted to talk to you about is my favorite course in all of the Plan 2 course I did at University of Texas was taking languages of science fiction. And at first I thought it would just be an easy pass or whatever, but then it was one of the few courses where attendance was absolutely mandatory, and it was at 8 a.m. So it was way hard, but I was like, all right, I'm going to go. It ended up being unbelievably rewarding because we learned stuff like the cop-outs that science fiction uses for language, because there is no way to take a completely dead language and learn it after the fact. That's why for years we didn't know what Greek was or how to read Egyptian, and it was the Rosetta Stone that finally allowed us to kind of piece together the beginnings of it.
The actual Rosetta Stone, kids, not the software.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Right? There's a reason the software is called that. But there's cop-outs in science fiction. For example, like in Dune, Frank Herbert, because Dune is secretly just about oil, he took all the language of Arrakis, and it's just straight up Arabic or Aramaic or whatever. He's it's like you hear him talk about jihad and that kind of thing. Some of the other cop-outs are, we've been monitoring your transmissions. That's why we can speak your language of English. And then my favorite cop-out is the one from Krang and Kodos. Is it Krang? Krang and Kodos on The Simpsons? Yeah, where they say, how do you speak English? They're like, no, I speak whatever the crazy English language is. It just happens to sound exactly like English.
That was like in Star Trek, they had the Universal Translator.
Yep.
Except when they didn't have it.
Right.
When it fit the plot device. And then Doctor Who, why do you have a Gallifreyan accent?
Yes. Yeah. What? No, it was great. And so I'm excited to hear about these guys. I'll definitely check out their thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So guys, I want you to imagine we're all at Dragon Con hanging out.
Yeah.
Right, we've had a blast. We don't remember some of it. What costume are you wearing, Justin?
You want to know what? I'm actually going to be dressed up as Brienne of Tarth.
Nice. Brian?
I'm cheerleader Iron Man. It's like a sexy, sassy Iron Man cheerleader outfit.
I'm gonna be my Tyrion Lannister Wolverine.
With steampunk, right?
No, steampunk. Just Tyrion Lannister.
Oh, come on.
Wolverine.
You don't have the Gilda Lily, Brian. He's Tyrion Lannister Wolverine.
Oh, my God. I swear to God, if somebody shows up as Tyrion Lannister Wolverine to Dragon Con, I will die of happy.
It would be like the two most awesome little people ever combined into one.
In fact, I want to see all three of them in our panels.
There you have. If you go to my website, look for Shrinker, you'll find out how to do your own Tyrion Lannister Wolverine. So
Wolverine, and then you got to shrink down into Tyrion Lannister Wolverine.
There you go. Actually, maybe somebody will take their kid and make how many kid Tyrion Lannisters do you think we're going to see this year at Dragon Con?
I'll tell you what. I thought that there would be more Game of Thrones last year, and it was very underrepresented. I was kind of shocked. I thought it would be like,
well, it's tough because it's like you got obviously Daenerys. You could put on like a silver haired wig. And wear a bunch of leather, and same thing for
commit, Brian.
The
bleach your hair.
The Dothraki. Wow, I've already forgotten his name. But outside of that, how do you look like any of the characters?
It can be done. All right, moving right along. So we're at DragonCon. Everybody listening live right now, we're all there. We're all there. We're all like, yay, yay! Right, we're having a blast. We're having a fun. Right, because it's like kind of like the ultimate kind of geek festival kind of thing.
Yeah. Sure.
So can you picture us? So we're in like, we're outside in a plaza or something like that. Okay. Are you with me?
Yeah. No, we're rocking the plaza. Actually, you know where we are? Can we be inside the Sheraton Hotel that looks like a giant Star Trek Enterprise with all these crazy dressed up folks?
Okay. But we've got to be outdoors. We're in front of there. Okay.
All right. Got it.
We're between the Sheraton and the Hilton or whatever.
Sure. All right.
All right, so we're there, right? We're having a great time, okay? Now imagine this.
Here it comes.
Thousands. Thousands of tarantula-sized spiders come swarming through.
No. No, like you're talking about like that William Shatner movie from the 70s?
Yeah, sure.
Have you not seen that? I've seen The Kingdom of the Spiders. I've seen it like 100 times.
Exactly what happens. We're there. We're celebrating. We're having a blast. Thousands of spiders come swarming in through.
Dude!
Number one, this is like, at this point, especially since Dragon Con is so much of like, it is so easy to fall into just like fantasy fulfillment, you know, in Dragon Con, where you can dress up. At Dragon Con, you dress up as whoever you want, and you will very easily, for several hours, be able to immerse yourself in the fantasy of your universe.
Oh, my God. There's no better example of that than that one guy who was dressed as Billy Dee Williams, Lando Calrissian, just walking around. He did nothing but kiss ladies' wrists all day long. He's like, well, what have we here?
Dude, I was, what's it called? I was dressed as the doctor for one day, and, like, it was a River Song came up to me and, like, asked me to, like, hold her purse. Like, it was like immediately we were friends because she was River Song and I was the doctor. What she didn't realize is I hate River Song, and I told her to go away.
You're like, sure, I'll take your purse and throw it in the gutter.
I have a con. I could work at Dragon Con, working the con of the Dragon Con. Yeah. All right, so we're there. Spiders come running through there, right? And these are big tarantula spiders. Now, Brian says,
"What? So here's the thing. Like,
it's not what you say, but go ahead and say what you're saying."
Well, no. Well, okay, this is me. Like, the wave is coming at me, and I'm intellectualizing about the whole thing. The first thing I think of is like, those aren't costumes. Those have to be actual spiders because like you see so much weird stuff, like. I had this double moment where I look over and it's Rick from The Walking Dead, and I'm like, oh man, that's awesome. And then I was horrified because I thought, oh crap, his things say Georgia police. I think he's actually a cop from Georgia. But then it turns out I was right. So it's like I was horrified, or it's like I was like, cool costume. And I'm like, oh wait, you're really a cop. You're like, no, I'm not really a cop. I'm
actually Andrew Lincoln. I play Rick Grimes on The Walking Dead.
No, another one is like, hello, I'm Andrew Lincoln. And you're like, what? Yeah.
Yes. You're British too?
I'm like, you're Cuban? That's amazing.
So you're there and you're like, spiders. So the second thing that goes through your mind, Brian, is like, hey, wait a second. I'm from Texas. We got scorpions, which are poisonous, but tarantulas, spiders this big, aren't poisonous.
Well, okay, first of all, scorpions aren't either. Scorpions aren't deadly. They scorpions and tarantulas, from what I understand, they're both about like bee sting level bites. By the way, killed a scorpion in my house just yesterday.
All right. So you're like, guys, spiders this big, they're not going to hurt you. We're fine.
Okay, no.
Calm us down, Brian.
No.
We're panicking.
No. I'll tell you.
I'm running, Brian.
Here's how I calm you down. Is by...
I'm standing on your shoulders because I'm Tyrion Lannister Wolverine and I can do this now.
What's funny is I'm going to be like, I'm the killer of spiders. I am the Spider-Man. And I just start stomping them underfoot, shouting, I am the Spider-Man over and over again. That's all I got.
So, but you're like, hey, guys, but listen, again, spider that big tarantula, not poisonous. So
I don't care. If it's, I don't care if it's
be the voice of reason, Brian. Talk us down. Just tell us this fact.
All right. No. Okay. Look, probably is not going to kill you because it's a big spider. Big spiders mainly like bees. Also, let's step on them.
Wrong. These ones are poisonous, Brian.
Damn it. Damn it.
And they do not like being stepped on. The first guy that steps on them, they swarm on them.
They're not.
Man, you are so smart yet ferocious, Tyrion Lannister Wolverine.
You are conniving yet have a healing factor.
He decided to go stomp on him like he's friggin' Michael Flatley doing the river dance, okay? Now, Justin, you and I, we got to start swatting these. Unfortunately, I got my Wolverine claws on, and I'm really into authenticity, so I'm swatting them off of Brian, and I'm like shredding your skin and your clothes off. Again, somehow magically you're naked again, Brian.
No, well, not entirely naked. I've got my G-string on. By the way, what you're describing with stomping...
Body rock!
What you're describing with stomping all the spiders, that's pretty much what happens in Kingdom of the Spiders. So far, everything we've described is exactly the movie I watched like 12 times when I was a kid.
So... that's a pretty horrific thing, right? Pretty horrific, pretty yeah. horrific scenario for a movie or,
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So you're at a festival, you're having a lot of fun with people, but let's say we're not at Dragon Con, we're at a town in India and we're celebrating the last day of our Hindu festival.
Oh my God.
And in comes a swarm of spiders.
Okay. Now does
like when we talk swarm, are we talking like the streets run black with spider? Like, or is it just like 80
where
spiders?
Where the streets have no legs.
Or many. Sorry.
Too many legs.
So, allegedly, two people are died. Scores of people showed up in the hospitals.
Okay, now.
Remember when we went to Spider Forest, Justin, near me?
Yes.
Okay. Imagine that moving towards you.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, no, there was like one forest. In South Florida, I guess it would be the Margate or Coconut Creek area that is just, like, packed. Like, it is, like, everywhere you can look just a little bit into the brush and you're going to see, like, a colony of spiders. That is a ton of spider.
Well, you realize that's the end. Spoiler alert. The end of Kingdom of the Spiders is they all hold themselves up inside this room because they're just everywhere. They've stomped all the spiders there are to stomp. And by the way, I suspect they killed like hundreds, if not thousands of spiders, because they definitely, you see living spiders and then a foot just of these giant, giant tarantulas. But the end scene after them boarding up, like then they start coming in through the chimney and then they're like, ah, so they start a fire. And then like the next day dawns and they peel back the boards on the windows and they realize that the entire house, the entire town, as far as the eye could see, is encased in spider webs.
Awesome.
Awaiting. Oh, it was terrifying. But my question is, does the spider hold like a special cultural significance to these guys? Like,
it's India, dude. I'm sure you're a spider at one point. Yeah. So experts are baffled.
Baffled by what?
They haven't identified what species of spider. Some people are saying, we think there's an exaggeration here. Some people want to spray the entire town with DDT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe it was just a bunch of spiders that really like naan.
Here's a description from locals. It leaps at anything that comes close. Some of the victims claim the spider launched onto them after biting.
It's
not just
terrified.
Like a quick thank you, ma'am. It's like clinging to you, not letting go. And you're not getting spider powers either.
Man, which would you rather face? A wave of spiders, a wave of scorpions, or a wave of bees, or a wave of spiros?
You know... Maybe spiders.
Why spiders?
Um, You know, vacillating between that and Scorpions. Scorpions, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but can you, I mean, I know, like, the really big ones aren't as harmful as the smaller ones, but right. You still have some kind of medium-sized ones that are harmful, where spiders.
Here's the other thing in my experience with scorpions. Scorpions are super slow. They walk with some swagger, because when you got two freaking giant claws and a stinger, you're just like, I don't give a rat's ass, bro.
So maybe you'd be better off with the scorpions, though, then, because, like, if you're going to go stomping.
But scorpions are terrifying, though, too.
Yeah, but plus, yeah, they got that tail. So you stomp on it, and that tail swings up and hits you in the ankle. And you're like, I should have worn boots.
Yeah, but also, they glow.
I shouldn't have worn dock shoes with no socks.
Those freaking scorpions.
Crocs! Ah!
Scorpions fluoresce, man. Like, they glow at sundown. How crazy is that?
That's just supernatural.
Yeah. I think I'd rather go spiders.
Yeah, so I think we need spiders. Justin?
Spiders or scorpions?
Or bees.
Oh, no way, bees. You can't. There's no way that the aerial mobility of bees is mitigated, no matter how scary something's crawling. Something's crawling, you can hit it with a broom, you know?
Yeah. But well.
I will say, you want to know what? I kind of feel like, with the proper footwear, I'm going to go scorpions, because, like, I think it's going to be way harder for them to just overwhelm you. I feel like spiders, you can be, like, overwhelmed really easily.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah, because the spiders, mean, like, they, you know, you're like, we're stomping. Like, okay, I'm at war, by the way, the spider that loves to build a web. I live in a townhouse, and I got it from the townhouse to a near tree. It's about 15 feet. There is a spider that makes a web to go all the way across there. And so I'll be like walking out of my, you know, walking out, you know, hit the gate, walking through my gate and walking the side light. And I'm like, doo, 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 doo. And then you feel that thing in your face.
Yeah, it is like, it's like a animal parable, Andrew and this spider.
I'll tell you what, though, the thing that's terrifying about spiders is.
And then I got to do the dance, the is it on me dance. The
sure.
The neighbors just look outside and they're like, oh, there goes that weirdo.
Yeah.
They start, party rock is in the house. Man, I think
a spider on my back.
I think the thing that bothers me the most about spiders is their Borg-like determination to just keep on going. Like, I remember as a kid being like, I don't want that web there. Blank, blank. Web's gone, totally ruined. And then I walk back the next day, web is there again. Blank, blank. And then walk back again, and the web's there again. Like, spiders just like, I will catch a fly here.
Yep. All right, moving right along, we had a sponsor.
We certainly do, Andrew. This is how we feel. Oh, yes, folks. Oh, where is the next gen of showing how you feel? Wear your displeasure on your shirts, hoodies, and more, available at cafepress.com. Just go ahead over to Cafe Press, search for UGH Wear, WEAR. And you can show that you are disgusted with the planet today. Thank you to Rob Harper of Ugh Wear for sponsoring this week's Weird Things podcast.
I'm going to take a look at that. Weird, you know, the new tagline for Weird Things, the only weirder than the podcast are our fans.
Or the sponsors.
I think that's the cool thing about the sponsors. It's like, obviously, the sponsors are not exactly a gigantic money-making venture for us. But, like, I just love what our fans do. It's so amazing that, you know, all the cool little projects. And I really like that it's that the people that are really serious about it.
It was absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
So I watched Armageddon last night.
Oh, dear God.
I love that movie.
What? It is the worst movie I ever made. It is the only movie that I rented on purpose from the rental on VHS. That's how long ago this was. I got in my car. I drove miles to be like, I want to pick a movie. And I handed over money. I'm like, I'm excited about this movie. And I brought it home and an hour into it, I was so angry at the way it treated me. I was so angry of what that movie thought of me as a person that it is the only movie I ever rented and did not finish. Ever. Ever.
You and Phil Plait. Phil Plait absolutely hates the movie.
Oh, yeah. No, he's made... I think that dude's paid a mortgage on how much he hates...
My idea of like the movie is like, I went into it and I always knew like, oh, it's a comic book. It's a big comic book kind of... It's to science fiction in space what, you know, Twilight is to romance.
So, you know? Well, and also I think it really mattered that I saw Deep Impact before it, and I loved it because
the reason I hated Deep Impact was that was the movie where like we're gonna get the science right, not like that dumb Armageddon. And watching Deep Impact, I'm like, that's
Deep
wrong.
Impact came out first.
It did.
Yeah.
No, they were competing. I mean, whether or not
three months before
the other one, it's not like
that was
one
the point. Is there when they were coming out and competing, the Deep Impact producers were like, we got our science right, not like that dumb Michael Bay movie, right? And I'm watching Deep Impact. I'm going, that's wrong. That's wrong. That's wrong. You know, and going, and it's not even that entertaining of a story. And I get to the end. I'm like, really? Armageddon. I'm like, it was like, to me, it was just like, a Transformers cartoon.
I'm going to
split the difference with the two of you because I also, like Brian, thought Armageddon was terrible. But I also, like Andrew, thought Deep Impact was terrible.
I thought Deep Impact was good. I like Deep Impact. Now, granted, I didn't go into Deep Impact with someone whispering in my ears that it was going to be scientifically accurate. I just went into it and liked it. And based on liking it, I was like, well, let me check out Armageddon. And Armageddon was just a horrific scatological slap in the face.
I mean, I will say there is, though, with Armageddon, you kind of... Like, I think Armageddon knows what it is more than...
I guess that was my thing with Armageddon, is I go in there and I go, these producers don't have any pretense. They're making a big, over-the-top comic book movie. They're not trying to be this, I'm writing a Huffington Post editorial kind of thing.
But they do... it's almost worse because of that. Because, like, if you're going to do that, then spare me an offensive moment where you say, inducing gravity by spinning mirror horizontally, and all of a sudden everyone stands vertically.
Dude, they did it. They had their own stupid gravity moment in Deep Impact. Go back and watch.
But no, I'm sure they did, but it wasn't as offensive to the general science knowledge of people watching.
Okay, but
Brian, I guess the point is like I intellectually was not, I didn't feel like they were treating me poorly or anything like that. I go, it's like Marvel Comics. I don't read Marvel Comics and go,
Okay, the opening scene of the movie is an angry what's his name? Bruce. Wait, why can I think of his
opening
name?
Opening scene is Bruce Charlton Willis. Heston talking about how it happened before, it'll happen again.
No, the opening scene is Bruce Willis chasing around with a shotgun, some dude banging his daughter. He gets picked up by a helicopter, goes off and has a 1 hour conversation saying, you got to get a team together. Then he goes and the guy banging his daughter that he was chasing with a shotgun an hour ago is now working at an oil well in Odessa saying, running my own business. Things are okay. It's been one goddamn hour.
No, it was 17 hours. It was 17 hours from when he left the oil rig to when he got to NASA. And then he said, they ran through all the scenarios they had to do. There was actually a timeline there.
Right. And they show him off running his own business in Odessa.
Well, that is, they all went back to what the idea is. When he left the oil rig, they said, everybody's going to disperse now. And so my point is, the writers knew
and actually,
that point was
one
silly.
Of the first scenes in that movie is a smaller meteorite hitting a Godzilla doll because they were competing with Godzilla either that year or the next year, and it was Michael Bay's middle finger to that movie.
Oh, my God.
All I'll say is this. I brought it up to get to a point, and I will say that if you go to the audience point of view, it is between that and Deep Impact, it is Armageddon is the far more beloved movie.
It certainly is more remembered than
so. Remember in the movie, if I can get you to remember,
yeah,
where they go there, and again, I love they open up the hangar doors, and it turns out the Air Force has two of their own secret space shuttles.
Sure, why wouldn't they?
Well, as it turns out, though, we do now know the Air Force does have a secret space shuttle. That was point. And I love the fact that they're like, and they're titanium skinned, and titanium would like melt like this in reentry, which again, I see that and I'm like, that's kind of, they're saying titanium because to the average audience, That's how you say
titanium.
Awesome.
Something strong, yeah.
It's wrapped in anyhow. So you know, they open up Air Force secret space shuttles. One, we now know they do have a secret unmanned space shuttle, but it even gets better. You see what happened today with the Pentagon's giving NASA?
Yes, yes. I was hoping this is where this is headed.
What happened?
Oh, you didn't see this, Justin? This is amazing.
No, I've been out of the loop today.
So Pentagon says to NASA today, says, hey nerds, you guys like space, right?
You like that? You like that Hubble thing? I don't know.
Like we like space. You like looking at stars and stuff like that. Like, yeah. You like astronomy? Yeah. Do you guys like your telescopes? Yeah. We got our Hubble. Oh, that's cute. How big is your mirror? Oh, 8 foot across. Okay. What kind of movable focusing element do you have? Oh, we don't have one. Oh, we've got two telescopes that are probably better than your Hubble just sitting in a warehouse collecting dust.
It's right next to these telescopes?
Because otherwise we were just going to like put them on eBay or something.
They're over here. They're right next to my cousin's Voltron and their old Dark Tower board game.
Two titanium space shuttles that we realized too late you shouldn't make them out of titanium, but that's not here or there.
Yeah.
And Dan, Michael Bay is our science advisor.
I didn't mean a doll. We actually have a Voltron that we got made back in 87.
Literally Voltron. So the Pentagon has offered to give NASA two space telescopes that have the biggest, the most important component of the Hubble really is that mirror, to get that perfect of a mirror to reflect that light the way it is. Apparently the Pentagon has two of them and it has an even better focusing element. Doesn't have the cameras or some of the other electronics, but that's
okay.
That's
now here's the thing: a mirror like that, and I don't want to get political, but I'm gonna dance on this line a little bit. A mirror like that is not built for focusing here on planet Earth, right?
No, it is. That could be because remember it has the.
No, but yes. Like Hubble can't focus here on Earth. Hubble can't even focus on the moon. That's one of the things.
Hubble does not have a movable focus element like these telescopes have.
I see. Okay, but regardless, the point. Okay, but the only reason it has that is ostensibly because they want to be able to watch other effing planets, right? So here's the thing.
No, this was very likely the Pentagon telescopes were watching Earth.
Okay, why would you have a movable element that would allow you to focus on distant star systems? If it's going to be used here on Earth,
No. The reason you have, again, I'm not a telescope expert. When you want to look at Earth, and you want to actually look at follicles on somebody
Justin Robert Young's head. Yes,
a really big mirror is very, very good. The movable focus element allows you to adjust it and to look at near Earth objects with much better resolution.
So you think this thing was intended to be able to read over the shoulder of diplomats reading their printed material?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes me feel better because I'm thinking like, why is the military?
What did you think it was? I don't want to be political. But somebody's communicating with aliens.
No, that's first of all, why would you use a telescope to communicate with aliens? That's idiotic. The point is,
if you were doing line of sight laser, it wouldn't be idiotic, Brian. And some people think that's the only way we'd communicate with them. So there.
if your charter is to defend the United States, it doesn't occur to me that you should spend that money on a superior ability to measure other planets than NASA has. That's what surprises me.
Yeah, and again, it's the reason it was for terrestrial. So, and that's why it actually was a better telescope, maybe better than the Hubble, is because Hubble didn't have that focusing thing that let you look at, let's say, things in our own solar system.
Does this mean we could finally get like high resolution images of all of the Apollo missions and put that rumor to bed?
Maybe. That'd be awesome. The problem is NASA would need money to have to finish the telescope, to put in the equipment they need. They would also need money for a staff to actually run the telescope. And then they would need, to get them into space.
Oh, if only there was a way to get stuff into space.
Space shuttle's canceled. Space shuttle's canceled.
Yeah, but what if there was
We're going to have the SLS system probably, you know. I hope Penny.
The future is here in 15 years with the SLS system.
Guys, you know, call me a dreamer, but if only there was some magical way to get stuff into space at a fraction of the cost of what we were paying for the space shuttle, like as little as 5% of the cost of a mission just 10 years ago. But I suppose it'll just be a fanciful dream.
Well, Brian,
it's science fact. So you're saying that, like, is this a possibility for NASA now? Is NASA looking at this as a serious possibility that I want to put
this
these things up?
If this month has not been like NASA, whoa, you know, we just found ourselves an Outback gift certificate.
Okay. This is
we didn't know we
like,
had.
How much can this we sell this like, on eBay
like,
for?
But we gotta rethink things. You know, now you have NASA is like, you know, they asked SpaceX a while ago to come up with their own plan for a super, super heavy lift rocket that would be like able to take an entire Mars mission out there, because NASA realized if they had to use conventional contractors like we're expected to use with the SLS program, it's going to cost tens of billions of dollars. If they can go to Congress and say, hey, SpaceX will bill us for $2.5 billion. Now they can go to Congress and say, hey, we got these telescopes over here, and SpaceX says they can launch them for, you know, X. It could mean a lot. But the problem is so much of that business is dealing with existing government contractors and keeping them happy, and that just rat nest of government crony capitalism.
Boy, isn't that the part that I think the three of us and I think we'll be the first to admit that we are slightly skewed on this. We are all highly optimistic about the privatization of space travel. We are all enchanted with the possibility that any Joe who's able to pull up the dough can fly to space, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I'm in the tank. I think I would speak for the both of you that, like, I think we're all in the tank with getting to space early and often.
Yes.
And that the way to do that is to, you know, make
for whatever
it cheaper
reason
and safer and more efficient.
Yeah, look, I'm not in the business of telling you whether or not it's appropriate to go to space. Like, think about this. Let's say you're a billionaire and you want to go to space just to have sex. That is your stated reason. You're like, I want to go. I want to bring my lady. It's going to be our 30th anniversary, and we're going to have space sex, and it's going to be awesome.
By the way. Brian, you just explained Richard Branson why he's doing Virgin Galactic.
Well, exactly.
Yes.
But
he's going to be the first.
Well, there are rumors, Andrew.
He's going to be the official first.
I was about to say there are rumors. Let's just say
he's going to take pictures.
Let me just he's going to live stream it and charge you big bucks. Let me just say, who's the couple? There was a man and a wife who had been married the week before they went up in the shuttle. There's no way. You're not telling me there was some space cowboy action going on up there.
You know, the hard part is like you don't have private quarters in the shuttle.
You don't even
have a shower.
You don't even need to hang a sheet up. You just hold a sheet up and then let go and it stays there.
It is entirely possible. The problem is like the shuttle is like maybe all I'm saying is that it is if it was done, it had to be a planned thing they were going to do, like one of the space missions. It's not like they would sneak off and do it and nobody else would know what they were doing.
Did you ever read Grapes of Wrath? There's this moment in Grapes of Wrath as they're on their way to the West Coast.
Whenever two astronauts are banging in space, Ma, look for me. I'll be there.
So it's like the teenagers, the boy and the girl, are definitely doing it in the car. And then it's like if you do the math, there are 14 people in this Model T. And so it's like, I guarantee you, man, they're doing that. That stuff's in space, Holmes. How can you not do that?
We got kind of sidetracked on the SpaceX thing.
So here's the thing to think about. One of the most exciting things that's happened in the last decade is the realization of how many near-Earth objects there are.
Oh, yeah.
There are asteroids. There are like 1,000 asteroids a kilometer or larger that come very close to the Earth, like as near, you know, within distances we'd consider almost lunar distances.
When I think too much about it, I get roid rage. It's terrible.
There's asteroids 20 kilometers across that would be easier for us to get to than the moon, because you don't even have to have land on them. You just kind of dock. You know, the Dragon could touch one of these and then take off. Okay. Now, just to think about our place in space, I pulled up the Wikipedia for near Earth objects and looked up historic impacts. Okay, so we all know about Tunguska. That was in 1908 when a stony asteroid, this is based on what we believe now, exploded over Tunguska with the force of 10 megatons of TNT. Okay, you can still see remnants of that damage, and for years, flattened trees everywhere around there, okay? 1979, the Vela incident. 22nd of September, 1979, an event was recorded near the junction of the South Atlantic and Indian Ocean. Some people thought maybe it was a low-yield nuclear test, but it was also initially thought to be the possible impact of an extraterrestrial object. The event, which has been known as a Vela incident, was identified by defense satellite orbit. It triggered multi-year investigations by several organizations which could not conclusively determine if the explosion was nuclear or non-nuclear. Okay?
Wow.
So that's 1979. 2002, Eastern Mediterranean incident. On June 6, 2002, an object with an estimated diameter of 10 meters collided with Earth. The collision occurred over the Mediterranean Sea between Greece and Libya at approximately 34 degrees north, 21 degrees east, and the object exploded midair. The energy released was estimated from infrasound was equivalent to 26 kilotons of TNT, comparable to a small nuclear weapon, the kind of thing that if it went off in New York City, we'd be like humongous.
We would go to war with space.
And you're like, all right. 2008, Sudan. Scientists calculated that a smaller asteroid just sighted that night would impact Earth on just, they just saw it that night, and they're like, holy crap, this thing's going to hit, okay? It impacted the Earth over the Sudan. The asteroid arrives predicted. This is the first time an asteroid impact on Earth has been accurately predicted. However, no reports of the actual impact have been so far published since it occurred in a very sparsely populated area. So Sudan's messy. Nobody's been able to actually go out there and see where it hit. But we saw this thing. We said, this thing's going to hit. And watched it come in, okay? Holy Indonesia, God. 2009. Fireball observed in the skies near Bone, Indonesia on October 8. This was thought to be caused by an asteroid approximately 10 meters in diameter. It's 30 foot, folks. The fireball contained an estimated energy of 50 kilotons of TNT, twice the size of the Nagasaki atomic bomb. Explode.
Whoa! Well, now, hold on. But Nagasaki, I mean, look, we've advanced quite far in our ability to blow crap up and ruin the world.
Oh, Brian, that makes it so much better. Because when you look at the photos of what happened over Nagasaki, if that happened in a city today, that wouldn't happen because now we make all of our city buildings out of magical materials that won't be flattened.
Yes, that's my point.
Brian, my point is not that we have better nuclear bombs now.
No. My point is, let's say that once a year, a rock that blew up with the size of a Nagasaki-level explosion.
Or twice.
Let's say it happened twice a year, every year. I think about how much of the planet is covered in water, and you don't care if that blows up. Then think of how much of the planet is uninhabited, and it's like it would be annoying to have a bunch of trees knocked over, but you get like maybe three farmers would get killed or whatever. Like the odds of actually hitting the odds of an actual Armageddon type experience are so, if you'll pardon me for saying, astronomically low, that I don't know. I'm optimistic at that level of destruction. Now, however, you tell me a 20-mile, if it's, or that was another thing that insulted me about Armageddon. It's the size of Texas, sir. There's no, an asteroid the size of Texas would be the end of everything, period. Nothing we could do about it.
So let's go look at some near misses, Brian.
All right, go for it.
So in 1972, we had the Great Daylight Fireball was witnessed by many people in the Rocky Mountain. It was Earth-grazing meteor passed within about 34 miles of our surface.
Wait, when was this one again?
1972.
Dude. No, okay, I'm thinking of a different one.
So wait, this is like, and this, the thing about the asteroids is the asteroids are like the planets that we find. They all get like stupid, jumbly, you know, word and you know, letters and numbers names. Like,
so
they don't call them like
March
Satan's 23rd, ticker.
1989, a 300 meter, that would be 1,000 foot diameter, the Apollo asteroid, diameter Apollo, so the 4581 Asclepius missed the Earth by 430,000 miles, passing, okay? You go like this, and that's twice from here to the moon, right?
Bro, look, here's the problem, man. It's like, why are you getting bent out of shape about this? It ain't like we could do anything.
Passed through where the Earth was 6 hours before.
What are we going to do? Why are you not afraid of catching Ebola? You can't do nothing about that either.
I am, and I can't.
I know. So you're terrified of everything. You're that guy in the glass box.
Well, no. I mean, like,
if we had been 6 hours slower in our orbit, it would have been the largest explosion recorded history, 12 times more powerful than like the, you know, the big old, the most powerful nuclear bomb ever made. Okay. It attracted widespread attention as it came so close. So,
all right. So here's the thing. And I find this interesting and I got to decide how far I want to take this. There are other issues that you and I are of the same mind of that we don't understand the benefit to inducing hysteria over. It's not like we can do anything about these issues for the next 50 to 100 years. And maybe cooler heads would say that, hey, there's nothing we can do about it for a while, whatever this politically charged issue may be. Maybe we should just focus on getting smarter and learning more about the problem so that when we're in a position to do something about it, we can. I'm going to say that asteroids may be in a similar category to this other mysterious, highly politically charged issue.
My, if you step past my dramatic reading of Wikipedia,
which was delightful, by the way,
I worry about these things not one bit. It's an eventuality. We will get hit by a big one will come towards us.
Sure.
Will come towards us. And the thing that we realized, you understand how much what we knew, you know, Thomas Jefferson, as brilliant as he was, did not believe in meteors.
Okay. Wow.
Because back in that day, you know, there was an account of meteorites, and he's like, I would sooner believe that, you know, these gentlemen have created an exaggerated account than rocks are falling from the sky. And then a little while later, we're like, you know, there are some, these things maybe do happen. And then people started looking at maps. And then you had, you know, people started looking at extinction events. And they started, you know, every 60 million years, 100 million years, something happens, you know. And then we realized, holy crap, there are big objects out there. And then in the last decade, discovering so many of these near-Earth asteroids, it's changed my view of, you know, one, space. Space is not just this. It's no longer, there's Earth, there's Moon, and then there's Mars, and then there's the asteroid belt, which doesn't look like it does, and Empire Strikes Back, and there's Jupiter. It's like, it's filled with stuff. What's the likelihood that something, you know, world-ending or super damaging is going to hit us, you know, in 100 years? Unlikely. Very, very unlikely. Absolutely unlikely. I believe, as you do, that we'll probably develop technology before then to handle these things. All the more reason to develop said technology.
Oh, no. And keep in mind, I'm not saying that we don't get smart.
No, Brian, you just said give up on space.
I said give up on space. Actually, I told you specifically, give up on life. Yeah, why don't you go join the Peace Corps with Spiro and the Fudge?
I mean, isn't there a benefit to kind of like knowing this stuff? No one's saying that we start panicking and curl up in the fetal position and
panic! Curl up in the fetal position!
Wait, I'm sorry, Justin. How can you listen to Andrew's reading and then say, nobody's saying we should panic, when literally the thesis, the abstract at the beginning of his paper said, my thesis is that we should all panic immediately?
No, I mean, like, there's a lot of horrifying things that happen. I mean, like, you know, it's like,
people are doing zombie attacks and eating our faces in Miami.
Yeah. All right, look, here's all I'm saying is when you can do something, do something. When you can't do anything, there's zero money in freaking out about it. Yes, make prudent strides towards doing something about it, but if there's literally nothing you can do at this moment, then, bro, chill out.
My overarching point is, if we're going to hyperventilate,
it should be on the Weird Things podcast.
If when Planetary Resources, this company with some of the people from Google, Peter Diamandis and others, announced that they want to exploit and they want to mine asteroids, and to do that, they're going to be putting up hundreds of telescopes to look at these objects, I think everybody should be cheering them on.
Absolutely.
When SpaceX, private company, accelerates our technology. Like right now, if we had a small object we thought a nuclear weapon could deter, there is one rocket. Actually, orbital scientists may get its rocket there, but there's one rocket on the pad that's been tested that we know.
Right.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know. It's which do you think is the better motivator? Fear of. And maybe this is the thing, is this is why I'm sort of chill about asteroids and stuff, because all things being equal, you got a robust economy, you got people doing about their daily lives. screaming, let's say the odds were as high as 1 in 100, screaming at the top of your lungs every night. It's the nightly, oh shoot, we're about to get killed by asteroids report, that all it does is try to reinforce in people that we are going to die and it will be at the hands of an asteroid that has a 1 in 100 chance of coming by year after year.
That never work. No, I think that's right. A horrible idea.
But you say, maybe there's gold. Platinum, maybe?
What I'm saying is that for many of us, we are motivated by the platinum and the potential of space exploration, but there are still people going, I don't know, it's the privatization of space.
Oh, God, I'm so done with that. You know what? Do you want to know what the privatization of space travel looks like? It looks like Han freaking Solo. So if you're against privatization, you're against Han Solo and Chewbacca. Chewbacca... Maybe you should be against that, because that's kind of close to slavery. Life debt? I don't know. Kind of sketchy.
Well, that was a thing he chose, because Han Solo, in the original version, freed Chewbacca when he was an Imperial slave.
Yeah, okay. Freed you to work for me instead. All's I'm saying.
It was Chewbacca's
just like, I mean, what am I going to do, you know, on Kashyyyk? It stinks. Everybody smells.
It stinks.
I might as well go out on this adventure.
All of my loved ones are there. I it'll be a pain
to
get back to
my
life day.
Come on.
I mean, like, I'll stop by. I'm not saying I'll never see him again.
I live like 800 years.
Yeah. How about I spend a couple of decades tooling around with this scumbag? This crazy contraption.
Man, think about that.
What happens when he goes home? We get the Star Wars Christmas special.
So think about this. Maybe the reason he was so quick to give up a life debt was just like, what are you going to live, 20 more minutes? Yeah, sure, a life debt. Whatever. Like, when you live 800 years, they're like, what? Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, what's 50 years?
Like, he was like, Han Solo was frozen in carbonite. Chewbacca's like, so it's off now, right? I'm good to go. I can go now.
There was that scene at the beginning of Jedi that was cut where Chewbacca's like at a casino and gets like a tap on the shoulder because Luke's contacted the concierge and informed Chewbacca that he needs to get back in action. It's just him with two nubile ladies on his lap, like throwing dice.
Two shag carpets.
So, Brian, I think we're very much in agreement on this. My point was just like, if there are people who are not motivated by, I don't know, the single largest economic boom in the history of man that could last thousands of years and spread us to interstellar distances, you're all going to die.
Yeah. We'll hit you at both ends, bro.
Yes.
We are pro SpaceX, both pronunciations of that phrase.
and I'll tell you what, the boom is here. You know,
which also applies to both pronunciation of SpaceX.
Oh yeah, low.
In fact,
boom,
that's got to be that's. This is a rebranding effort. It's got to be SpaceX, and the tagline has to be "The boom is here."
So, yeah, yesterday I'm on Twitter and I go, "Have you guys noticed if you say SpaceX really fast, it sounds like SpaceX?" And everybody's like, yeah, we already discussed that in the chat room. Yes, we already know this. Everybody knows this. You're the last person to know this, Andrew.
I would say the latest person to know this.
No, I'm probably the last guy.
You will be the last. No one will realize
it. I'm wearing a SpaceX shirt, and I don't realize this. So,
we got a sponsor, bro?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. We have I would like to remind everybody that the brand new book from Andrew Main, Hollywood Pharaohs, available now on Amazon. Listen, you're going to want to go over there and find out what all the fuss is about. Just nothing but two scoops of five-star reviews pour in every single day from happy readers for Hollywood Pharaohs. So head on over to Amazon. Pick it up right now. And
Justin, enough about my book, which is the number 3 rated mystery on all of Amazon right now. The number 3 best rated mystery. Enough about
that.
Yeah,
and would you please stop talking about how it's only 99 cents and people clearly love it?
About that. And yes, it is rated as the 3rd best out of every single mystery book on Amazon right now.
Somebody out there decides to vote me down.
Please don't do that. But let's go to a sponsor, like a real sponsor, like maybe somebody with PortCon, Maine.
Oh my gosh! Can I tell you how great PortCon is? Do you know Do you know your friend of mine, when Patrick Delahanty helps to put on one of my favorite, it may be my second favorite convention nationwide, and I'm including Dragon Con in that. No offense to you, Patrick, but Dragon Con is pretty sweet. But if you are in the Northeast area, you got to come out to PortCon. They've got amazing voice actor talented guests. I'm going to be doing a live stage show there. I'm going to be hanging out for the Brian Brushwood after show. Essentially, it's a live version of the old school BB Live show that we used to do. It's going to be right there in Portland. It's going to be amazing.
It's a celebration of geek culture interests, including anime, gaming, science fiction, costuming, fantasy, video gaming, offer combat, steampunk, and more. That's June 21st to the 24th. Folks, it's coming right up. You can do PortCon.
And meet me. You can meet of the Weird Things podcast, Brian Brushwood, live in person.
That's South Portland, Maine. PortCon, Maine. Look it up. All right.
You got any picks?
I got a pick.
I got a pick to pick with you, sir.
I'll pick, and I'm going to go ahead and pick the last episode of Game of Thrones. I very much like this season.
How great. Tell me you watched it, Andrew.
What was this?
Game of Thrones.
I haven't heard of it.
Agame of Thrones.
No, I kind of like, I don't like awesome. Like when things are like really well written and awesomely acted and really compelling stories and things are done such a sense of scope and scale that I haven't seen since probably watching The Lord of the Rings and the movie. Why would I want to watch that?
I'll tell you why.
Ew.
Because they don't.
It's very scientifically inaccurate too.
Justin, I got a question for you, buddy.
Go.
As somebody who started off watching the series and then read all of the books and is now watching the rest of the series, you and I had discussed how in the middle of season two, I'm not going to say unhappy, because I was not unhappy. I was just nervous about how it started to diverge from the book, but then it snapped back and got right in line with the book. The finale had some elements that were very different from the book, some visual punchy moments that absolutely did not happen in the book, and I completely loved them. What did you think?
I picked this book so I could pick a fight with you, hoping that you would not have liked it.
And are you kidding me? Why would I have not have liked it? That was amazing.
Because that's your thing. You're like, I don't want to change the book guy.
But they didn't. They kept to the heart of it, and they told the story.
No, they did. I thought watching, the second book is my favorite of the books just because I'm very much a big fan of Tyrion in political situations, and that is the book
where
he is the most kind of in power wielding, and all of a sudden you see sort of Tyrion, this person who has always been displaced and always been kind of fighting and making his own way, all of a sudden sort of gets plugged into the exact position where he can be the most powerful person in the world and demonstrates why he's good at that. So I very much love that book. I love the season. I can understand that, you know, there were a few people, you know, or a few issues that people had with little divergences, nips and tucks here and there, including what happened in the finale. But, you know, I think it's exactly what you would hope when you have a great source material and you have a creative team that wants to do right by it. They both didn't. They've made it its own thing. It lives and breathes by itself, much like what Andrew said, that the Lord of the Ring movies lived apart from the books while still telling, you know, taking away the most important parts of the George R. R. Martin series.
And if I could add, too, that Brian, you know who directed, or excuse me, rather, who wrote last episode?
Yeah, Blackwater was written by George R. R. Martin, and I was so thrilled because you forget that George R. R. Martin has a background in television writing, and you would think that he might hold the story as so precious that he wants to preserve certain elements of it at the expense of the television viewing experience watchers, but he doesn't.
He gets the difference in the mediums and how you have to use. You have to have a When you look at Game of Thrones, the first book is a 40-hour audiobook that has to be condensed into not even 10 hours, actually more like 9 hours. And you have to condense characters, you have to condense events, and you have to, and that's the problem. Like, I love the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and they had to make those kinds of choices, and they're always going to upset because everybody reads the book their own way. But when you have this, you have, you know, kind of like in, you know, Walking Dead, you know, when you have Kirkman going in there and writing episodes and stuff, in this with George R. R. Martin, it's the blessing of the writer saying, this is as close to my vision as I think we can get on television.
Right.
Particularly when I'm responsible for writing this episode that happens towards the tail end in this version.
One of the things I like is it seems like the rule of thumb seems to be, let's get them to the exact same place they get in the book, and we don't mind changing the reason they get there. But what matters is we're here now. In so many episodes, so many pages, we have to be at this point. Do we really care if the temporary motivation or the temporary incident is X, Y, or Z, as long as you get to that next place?
It's like, you know, there were elements in specifically the Daenerys storyline in this season where there are things that diverge from the book. But I think when you go back and you read, and having read that second book fairly recently, when you really go back and think about, you know, in the book, what happens to Daenerys in Qarth, it might not be as much as you think.
Right.
You know, and a lot of it is stuff that plays great in the literary medium, but doesn't particularly, you know, if you were just to film it like the book, would not be nearly as interesting. And I think the way that they got her, you know, to the point where she is in
no
in
spoilers.
The story. Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, no, in the what's it called? In the TV series, the way that they got her to where she needed to be was fantastic. It tied it back into, you know, what her main motivation is, what the important part of her in the story and in this universe. And, you know, I really just couldn't say enough for it. I'm thrilled with the series. I think it's fantastic, a fantastic achievement. And my least favorite part about it is that we have to wait so long before we get any more of it.
Yeah, and the current rumor is that they're going to break the third book into two seasons, right?
That's the I don't know. I've repeated that a million times. I have no idea where I heard it. I could just be blowing smoke, but you know, we'll see. It would make sense that there are things that happen in the middle part of the third book that are major issues, were what would be major enough to end a season on, it would make sense. So,
I will say this as a person who only made it through halfway into the first book and has no idea what's happening in the third book, has no idea where it goes. What I love about this, and I think Scott Sigler kind of mentioned his fear of getting into it because of like the way Lost and Battlestar Galactica ended. And I agree with his fears on those, because as a writer, you tend to look at things that make for very interesting episodic kind of stuff or mini arcs, but you have this feeling that it's not going to end well because the writers don't have a place to end. What I loved about this was, you know, where the second season ended, you know, the first season had escalated, and then where the second season ended, we know where we're going. We have an idea of this bigger conflict that's coming, and there will be a resolution to it. You know, it's not like Lost, where you're fearful that it's going to all be magic and they're dead, and they tell you that's not the case, and then you realize by the end of the second to last season, oh, it's magic, and we're going to use a writer's cop-out to say that they're not dead, but they are dead.
Right.
You know, or Battlestar Galactica, where you realize that the last episode showed more about how frustrated and tired the producers were of trying to do this show on a basic cable television budget, and just wanted to say more about their journey than the friggin' story, in my opinion.
Huh.
No, I agree. And this is, you know, listen, obviously the books are a story that I think unfurls fantastically, and anybody who has not read the books but has watched the shows, I mean, just be prepared that there is a lot to come, and you know, all the elements that you've enjoyed the escalation so far only escalate further. It really is just a great masterwork, and to me, it's got the belt. It's got the best thing on TV belt as far as I'm concerned, in terms of handling a genre programming making it, you know, accessible, I mean, to a wider demographic, and taking what is, although it is very readable, it's extraordinarily readable, especially when it hits its groove. You know, it's not like the Song of Ice and Fire series is super popcorn. You know, that's a hard thing to do. It's a tremendously difficult project, and they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
And I would say this, from a storytelling point of view, if you're afraid to get into it, I'll tell you the reason why I think you should, is the way it – I'm going to say I don't know how it ends, but the way that it should end is the person who is worthy of that Iron Throne you see is the person – it ends with that person there after dealing with the conflicts and stuff.
It's I was about to say – It GD better well be how it ends, and none of us know, because otherwise it's like you cannot torture an audience as bad as George R. R. Martin tortures his audience,
right,
and not give us the proper payoff of what all expect the ending to be.
But the nice thing is that it's unlike Lost, where you're like, how the hell can they end this and make us happy? Here it's like, bring us the leader, the person that we think earned this and should be there, and handle all the other conflicts that have developed. And then end this thing and tell us Westeros had 1,000 years of peace. And we're like, thank you. Great.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, and that's I'll tell you, that's a great way to put it, Andrew. And that to me is the beauty of the series, is you might have your favorite person for whom you would like to win the Iron Throne. But at various points in the story, up till now and going further, there's moments where everybody, you know, you get pros and cons.
Right.
You know,
there's even people, and that's one of the beauties of the way he writes. There are people you think that there could be nobody worse than this person. And then you'll spend 5 chapters seeing life from their perspective. And then you're like, yeah, this person's not so bad.
Yeah, it's a thing where every time they cut away to somebody else, except, and even Sansa.
Yes.
You know, even the person I joked about, like, I've made some comment about not being able to make it through the first audiobook, and they go, oh, and then meanwhile, Sansa. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, in second book, she, you know, matures. I'll do my pick.
Yeah, no, it's great. And all I'll say is if you liked the Jaime and Brian moments in the series finale, then you will really love the ye old 48 hours that happens in the third season.
What do you got for us, Andrew?
My pick. We've been talking a little bit about space lately on this podcast.
Yeah.
And I was going through Amazon. I said, you know what? I don't know enough about rockets and other stuff, and I don't know anywhere as much as I want. And I bought some real technical books, but then I said, you know, so I could, you know, calculate, you know, C3 and Delta V and all these other fun, exciting things about escape velocities and orbital mechanics and stuff. But I said, you know, let me start off with something simpler. And I came across this book. It's by a guy named Pierce Bazzoni. He's written a number of things on books, other books that are about space, not books on books, because that would be stupid. And it's called How to Build Your Own Spaceship.
What's it about?
Well, Brian, it's about cats.
Goblins.
The premise of the book, and what he did is he chose the premise. He said it's a conversational book where he's talking to you as if you have decided that you want to maybe get into the space industry, maybe start a company and do something along there. And he does he's a guy who's written numerous books on space, so he knows his history. It's broken down into sort of 7 big chapters. When's the space age coming for the rest of us? You know, gets into the rocket science, the different kinds of spacecraft you have, like, you know, why solid rocket boosters versus liquid propellants, the different kinds of liquid propellants. And then, like, what goes into the Spaceship One or the Virgin Galactic Spaceship Two, how that works, and the advantages and disadvantages, and in a very approachable way to describe this. He talks about a lot of things and, you know, the problems of the Apollo program and the shuttle program and what we learned and what the Russians did and the big failures. It's a great overview of the history of that and then talking about the problems we have to solve. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I learned a lot of things in here that I did not know about, even in the Apollo program and the Russian program. And then it was written in, it came out 2009. So at that point, you know, who was going to be the space leader wasn't quite as clear. SpaceX was still, you know, working on their Falcon 1s and you know, Blue Origin, you know, Jeff Bezos' company was still there. And even Armadillo was kind of had a bigger sort of presence than they do now, which they're not doing any of the contracts or stuff. But it talks about those players, and it talks about Virgin Galactic in very hopeful terms. And Virgin Galactic, by the way, Richard Branson's company, they just got their FAA permit to test fly Spaceship Two to actually do this year. So finally,
holy cow, awesome. Has it been a freaking decade since it was 2004, 2005?
Yeah, and then, so in any event, they talk about a lot of different ways of getting payloads into orbit from dropping, you know, from rockets or dropping from aircraft. The different companies have tried this stuff. An overview of kind of the military, you know, what they've been doing. It talks about, like, for instance, we had, when Sputnik was launched by the commies, we actually had.
By the way, apologies. First of all, that's their word. You're not allowed to call them commies.
They were commies back then.
I know. Listen, I don't want to even hear that kind of language.
I'm not calling them commies now. They were commies back then.
All right. Look, I'm uncomfortable.
I mean, they were pretty proud of it, Brian. Like, you know, right, that was kind of their deal.
Yeah, it was kind of their name. All right. Lord. I mean, it was CCCP. What did that stand for, Brian?
Commie pricks. Yeah.
Pinko.
Pinko. Commie pinko.
Technically, it was a Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, but it meant commies, okay? My point is, so when the commies...
You're like, bro, I was just raised this way. That's how I saw them as commies.
Brian's fellow travelers, if you will. Brian's comrades.
Comrades at arms, yeah. Okay,
when they launched Sputnik, apparently at that time, we had sitting in a hangar a rocket capable of doing the same thing. It's a Redstone rocket, okay? One of the things that Wernher von Braun had developed. But Eisenhower... did not. We could have launched like the summer before, but Eisenhower says, nope, I don't want, it was a military rocket. And he said, no, at that time we had like NACA or whatever our civilian space agency was. He says, I want the civilian space agency to get that launch first. And so they're hurrying. They're trying to develop their Vanguard rockets, which were really good at blowing up. They were really good, very tall bombs. Not so good rockets. And partially because we had this prejudice against using some of the German know-how. The Redstone rocket, you could arguably consider it. It was kind of like instead. It was like the second. It was like the V3 went from the V2 to the V3. It was our version of a V2 rocket improved. We've talked about this before. The V2 rockets, the rockets the Nazis used. Is that okay, Brian? Can I call them Nazis?
Okay, that's my National word, Socialists. Not theirs.
Yeah, they prefer National Socialists.
Yeah, the National Socialists of Germany, the one they launched. Okay. Into England, that they delivered this technology to the British repeatedly. They said, here, have them. We want you to have these. And the British, you know, were like, no, we're going to hide in our bunker and because they were bombs. The V2 rocket went 100 miles up. It went into space. It was the first rocket. Like, the Nazis,
as high as Spaceship 2, right?
Yeah, Spaceship 1. So it went high. It would have won the X Prize.
Yes. How amazing is that?
If you put a person on it, it would have won the X Prize. And, you know, but anyhow, when that technology, when we brought it over to the United States, a lot of those scientists, you know, the Americans, we want to do it our own. And, you know, the Nazis and, you know, Wernher von Braun had based a lot of it on Goddard, who, Goddard was one of us. And he was the guy that developed, you know, the whole idea of liquid fueled or really pursued that. So anyhow, the point was, is for political reasons, we did not do it. And then the Russians beat us. And then we're like, we got to get this thing ready. And we couldn't get our Vanguard rockets ready. So what they did is they took this Redstone rocket, which was a military rocket. And they painted over it, said like US Army or whatever on it, and said, oh, it's the USA.
Wow. And said,
let's go launch this. And so the rocket we ended up using was the rocket we could have used before to, you know.
So it's just the hesitation that made us be second place. We could have won.
Yeah, and not to dismiss, the Russians put a lot of really brilliant people, a lot of really clever people in there, and a lot of, you know, forced labor and into building their program. And they did achieve. I mean, the Russian achievement is such that the rocket engines that we use today, even for our own military launches, many of them are Soviet leftover hardware. There are all the other companies trying to compete with SpaceX, to my knowledge, that are building conventional kind of rockets are basing their designs on Soviet rocket booster designs that they've licensed from them. And that goes into, in this book, how to build your own spacecraft. It covers a lot of this. It gets into life support, the toilet problems, the International Space Station. It is a wonderful overview. It is a brisk 215 pages.
Breeze right through it.
So highly recommend it. How to build your own spaceship.
All right. So let me say, for sake of following up, you remember last week I recommended that I was listening to Wild Cards, a collection of short stories written in the 1980s, yeah, edited by George R. R. Martin. And it has been very hot and cold. There's been stories that I've totally loved. There's been stories that I totally have been sleeping through. Some of them literally, like I woke up and I'm like, I don't even understand what's going on. I'm just going to skip to the next story. But it seems like each of the authors wants to tell their own story. Stuff begins in the middle 1940s when the event happens that the wild card virus escapes and so on. I did not really care for the tying in of mutant powers essentially with the Red Scare and the McCarthy era witch trials, mainly because most of that has been explored in popular movies nowadays. But I finally got to the first short story.
Bad memories about you being afraid your friends are going to get caught.
Yeah, well, and the fact, yeah, that I used to be a mutant in the 1960s, that's discomforting too. I finally got to the first short story written by George R. R. Martin, and it's exquisite, man. That guy can write. That guy can write, whether it's about Tyrion Lannister in the lands of Westeros or about Daenerys Targaryen on the, you know, across the narrow sea. And he can write about a Brooklyn kid bestowed with supernaturally strong telekinesis who takes himself a VW bug, puts armor all around it, and uses telekinesis to fly around and do right by the world, calling himself the Turtle. It's fantastic. It's if you do the Audible experience, it's going to be hot and cold, but so far I'm happy I'm doing it, even though parts of it are really cold. However, that's not my pick. My pick is In Advance. You got 1 month. You got 1 month, 10 days from the moment this is posted for you to get caught up on a little show called Breaking Bad. It's up on Netflix. You better hurry up because the final season is coming up June 15th, and it's exquisite and exceptional. I love it.
All right.
All right.
What, you're not going to argue with me? You're not going to be like, the book was better?
I've never seen it.
What?
I know I'm missing something about the show. I started when it first started. I mean, I'm a huge Bryan Cranston fan, and I watched the first couple episodes, but then I think I've mentioned this before. I have to get a character and either kind of understand if they're bad, I have to get that they're bad and kind of understand why they're bad. If they're good, I have to kind of get why they're good and what they do. And with his character, I think I've mentioned before, is like, all right, this guy's dying of cancer, and he's decided to build a meth lab, ostensibly to take care of his wife. And all I can think of is just the horrific and profound embarrassment and tragedy that would be when the family finds out that this is what he's doing. And it seemed like such a much more horrible thing than the poverty. And that was my problem. I go in like,
That's only a problem if you get caught, Andrew.
Well,
don't you understand?
I understand that, but that's my point, is that I go like, I was so, for a guy that's presented as this really, really smart guy, and this I go, and I guess that was just it. Is like,
here's the problem, is the only way I can sell you on why this is not that and why you would love it is to tell you things that would spoil the experience for you.
So, I'm just saying he became very unsympathetic very quick.
Well,
I lost all sympathy for him.
All right. So Oh, there are things I want to tell you, Andrew. There are things that this could be why. The exact reason you just stated might be why the reason that you love this show. But I'm going to tell you two things. First of all, I would recommend that you watch The Shield first because I love The Shield even more than this show. But The Shield's not available on Netflix, so I'm going to say watch this show because it's amazing. That's all I'm going
to
say.
How many episodes in do I have to get where I go, okay, I can get over the fact that he's being portraying a very unsympathetic person?
How many have you watched any episodes?
Yeah, I watched like 3 or 4 episodes. I was like 4 or 5 episodes in.
And then you decided like that you had a hard time understanding where he was coming from?
I understood the writer's logic of where he was coming from, but the character logic just seems so inconsistent to what I go, he's an unsympathetic person, you know? You know, a Tony Soprano, I get like, all right, guys, born this way, raised this way,
he's
this is why
Tony Soprano.
You know what? I'm going to say get to season 2. Watch the first
couple.
Even
like Sons of Anarchy. I go, okay, these are amoral.
Oh, no. See, like Sons of Anarchy was not nearly as sympathetic for me as Breaking Bad. And even more. So here's the thing. Breaking Bad is the exact inverse of The Shield. The Shield starts with a character that you really like. You spend the whole pilot understanding what he's about. And then something absolutely shocking happens, and it totally makes you hate the character, and you think he's damned. And, like, from the first episode, you're like, you are going down, character. And then every moment you spend watching The Shield since then, he starts at zero, and he keeps building himself up. You're like, well, he's not that bad. Well, he's doing this for this reason. Well, blah, 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 blah. And then at some point, you find yourself shockingly hoping he doesn't get caught. Breaking Bad is the reverse. Breaking Bad is, Andrew notwithstanding, because you're the first person I've spoken to who did not, you know, feel for Walter White. Breaking Bad is a guy who has a situation thrust upon him that you are totally sympathetic with, but he keeps doing things that make you...
I get that he becomes this, like, descends into being like this crime lord. I mean, I get that. I guess my thing was I just had this sort of... The first leap just felt like such a contrivance to me that I couldn't get over that.
Yeah, all right. Well, I would encourage you to...
Second season of Sons of Anarchy, I'm going to be honest. It starts feeling like an after-school special with swearing.
What did I say? What did I just say about Sons of Anarchy? Before we went live, I said Sons of Anarchy, channeling Dan Savage, it gets better. It gets so much better.
At what point you said that, though? So.
Well, it was before... let's see. Well, I said it before the show, but...
No, I meant within the show. I didn't know what season or whatever.
Everything builds up to season 3. Okay. Season 3 is interesting, and you're like, okay, I get where they're headed here. Season 3 ends, something happens. Season 4 begins, and it's a completely clean slate. Everything is wiped. And you're like, I am seeing the beginning of a new series, and the new series is so much more interesting than the first 3 seasons.
Do their spines light up when they have sex, and do we find out why?
God, I didn't want to say it, but now you've said it, and there it is.
Let me just say one thing, and I don't want to have a discussion about it, but with Breaking Bad, like, and I was one of those guys with The Wire, to the point where when people were like, I just don't want to watch The Wire because The Wire fans are annoying. Yep. I understand. I was an annoying fan. But I, from the opposite side of the coin, kind of see that with Breaking Bad. I get kind of bristly with Breaking Bad fans, especially since there seems to be a narrative amongst fans of that show that, like, are very antagonistic toward Mad Men. Like, for whatever. Like,
oh, you and I got into this. I'll tell you what. If you want to lose your Mad Men baggage, your 1960s soap opera baggage, let me tell you flat out that The Shield is better than Breaking Bad. So if you want to put your money where your mouth is, go watch The Shield.
No, it's fine. I mean, listen, I'm not saying it's not a good show. I'm just saying that, like, why can't we all just have shows that we like?
That's not at all what you're saying. What you're saying is...
That's literally what I'm saying.
No. That's what you're saying now. What you've said in the past is, dude, you got to watch Breaking Bad. Oh, Breaking Bad, I'm so tired of hearing about how great it is. Oh, woo-boo-hoo.
No,
Mad Men's success is ruining Breaking Bad.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that Breaking Bad... fans, I'm not saying anything about the show. I haven't seen the show. I haven't seen frame one of the show. The show could be the best thing ever, could be the worst pile of garbage ever created, right? I don't know. That's an X factor. That's a box that I haven't opened.
I bet it's a very well done show. I bet if I get over my thing with Breaking Bad, I'll probably really get into it. It's just that some, and like I've had that problem before shows where I just have to kind of break through and let the writers do the thing they wanted to set up and do. And that's everything I say about that is it's me, not like me trying to say to other people like, oh no, because people love the hell out of that show and smart people love that show. And I think that we really shouldn't pick apart other people's choices and shows. And I'm glad that we're at this point where we sort of acknowledge that, you know, it's okay to have things that you like and your friends shouldn't make fun of you.
All right. Kill it with fire. Kill it with fire.
The man, the paper boy.
Hey, listen, guys, it's been really weird. I gotta go leave. Uncle Jesse and everybody else is on. It's time for some Full House. Oh, Bob Saget, you're like clean cut. I love you. Dave Coulier, you crack me up.
Tell me your version of the Aristocrats.
Candace Cameron, you're the best one out of that family. Jody Sweetin, stay clean. Mary Kate, Ashley,
Want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.